Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Eleanor Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. Tonight we talk about a problem that many of us struggle with, and that is how to encourage our children and adolescents to become the best they can be when surrounded perhaps by peer members who may be encouraging them to perform criminal acts in order to be included in the group. In simple words, how do we help our children to recognize their own gifts, their own natural talents, and confidence in their ability to contribute to society? How do we do this when perhaps they've already been involved in the juvenile justice system? Perhaps they are on probation. What can be done to trade delinquency for contribution? My guests this evening believe they've discovered the road to helping teenagers move from juvenile justice system to the juvenile contribution system. My guests this evening are paving the road to restoring juveniles who have been caught in the justice system and helping them to make positive contributions and take charge of their lives. My guests this evening are Dr. Joseph Abraham and Linda Abraham, who have been together for 30 years in marriage. They are the co-founders of the Impact Project, a private children and youth agency located in Emmaus, Pennsylvania. Dr. Abraham, who is the CEO of Impact Project, earned his master's and doctoral degrees from Lehigh University's Counseling Psychology Department. Linda Abraham has served in the role of Director of the Educational Services as well as Chief Operating Officer for 22 years and is one of the staunchest advocates of the educational rights of foster care children in the state of Pennsylvania. The Impact Project, established in 1991, was voted Residential Program of the Year in 1993 by the Pennsylvania Juvenile Court Judges Commission, and the Impact Project was again awarded the Community-Based Program of the Year by the Joint Commission. And it's a pleasure to welcome Dr. Joseph Abraham and Linda Abraham to Take Charge of Your Life on WDIY.
Thank you, Ellie. It's nice to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. How did this idea come to mind? But first, tell us, what is the Project Impact?
Well, the Impact Project, as you mentioned, is a private children and youth agency located in Emmaus. But we have always worked with teenagers, and we felt in our various jobs at the time, I was a guidance counselor in the high school, and Joe was working with a delinquency services department for another agency, we just saw there was a lot of cracks that the children tended to fall between in services that were being provided. And we just thought, you know, we could fill those cracks. We have a different philosophy in how we might help them and encourage them and invite them to be the best that they could be.
And Joe, what was your thinking on the idea?
At the time, I was director of delinquency services for another agency in the greater Lehigh Valley area. And I had done my Jerry Maguire position paper to them. I did about a 23-page paper, and I said, there's a better way to service these kids from the juvenile court system. And it wasn't met with the greatest of favor at the time. And I came home to Linda, and I said, this is frustrating. And she said, well, maybe it's time that we do it for ourselves and show them that it's a better way and a different way to do it. So we spent a year at the kitchen table on once a week at night and the entire weekend writing up the entire program. We got turned down for a startup loan 5 times by the banks. Finally, a local banker tied us into the Lehigh Valley loan pool. We moved our office to downtown Allentown to fit within the geographic limits for the Lehigh Valley loan pool. Got the monies to start the program, and I left my job and said, oh boy, now I've got to find a way to make this work and pay the bills.
And you decided to call it?
The Impact Project.
The Impact Project. And what made you decide upon that name?
Well, we felt that we wanted to make an an impact on the young lives that we touched.
Why the name became, we knew impact was the pivotal point in it. But back then, when you were trying to become a corporation, we became a C corporation in Pennsylvania, you were allowed to submit three names to see whether your incorporation would go through. So the first three did not go through. The second three did not go through. So I called her on the phone. I said, what if we tweak it this way? Mm-hmm. So the Impact in all capital letters project incorporated became our incorporation on the seventh try.
Now, how does this agency differ, let's say, from other agencies in the area who also deal with foster children? What is the difference? What's the focus?
Well, I think first we do specialize and always have focused on the adolescent population, going into young adults. But we had philosophies that meshed and complemented one another. We believed that if you really advocated for the important points of their life, and that would be their lives in the community, their lives in their schools, and their own personal lives, that if you invited them to succeed in all three aspects, that you had a greater chance of them being successful long term.
We also, when we first started, we were exclusively working with the juvenile court systems. We were less working with the dependent kids in the offices of children and youth, and more with the juvenile probation department. So our specialty, clearly, in addition to what Linda says, it was working with juvenile offenders and giving them, inviting them to succeed in restorative justice and giving them a second chance and showing them the path to overcome a lot of the obstacles that they had.
Did you have any personal experiences of your own, Joe, that led you to this agency development?
Well, my story is probably a unique one in that I was a kid of the Allentown School District system. I was in all the nice, best, and the brightest of classes. But when I was 10 years old, I came down for Christmas Eve morning and pulled my dad out of a tub of bright red water, and he had cut his wrists, and I was screaming to my mom. He did some time in psychiatric hospitals locally and came back, and my dad deteriorated. My dad became paranoid schizophrenic, and he used to sit around the kitchen table, and there were five seats around our kitchen table because I had two younger brothers. There were three sons and mom and dad. And dad would have conversations with the four empty chairs. He was, again, paranoid schizophrenic. He had auditory and visual hallucinations. I can tell you that now that I have a better understanding of it. And my dad was hearing voices, and the voices were telling him that he needed to kill me. And he would put me up against the refrigerator with a butcher knife under my neck. And it became kind of a daily routine that I didn't like very much. And when your feet are dangling above the floor and you're feeling very powerless, you, as a 12-year-old, decide to take control as best you can. So I did as big a quasi-runaway as I could from home for about 4 months. I slept at every friend's home that I could, and I used to drop pennies under the counters at Walmart on the east side of Allentown, and if I could find 15 cents, I could get broken soft pretzels and water ice, and that would be my dinner, and then go see if I could get into my bedroom, and if I couldn't, I'd sleep at a friend's house.
And would you lock the door when you came into
If I got into my bedroom, I barricaded myself in my bedroom. And my mom didn't really know what was going on because she thought she was my dad's target, and she would work till midnight and then not come in till 1 or 2 because she would hope that he then would be asleep. And somebody, to this day, after I didn't have much reserves left in my tank, somebody saw that I was hanging out at this store in the east side, and I went to school one morning. I was at Harrison Wharton and seventh grade, and this man, they called me down to the office, and this man sat with me, and I have no idea who he is or what his name is or anything else. It's a long time ago. And he sat with me all day, shared lunch with me, gave me part of a sandwich. And he wanted to keep family secrets. We all do. We keep them very guarded. We keep them very close to our chest. And he guessed really close. And I couldn't hold it together. I started shaking and I started crying. And he called my mom in, who was really, really upset and had no idea and felt like she let me down and didn't protect me. By the end of the day, he had gotten my father in a long-term psychiatric hospital through the Veterans Hospital in Lebanon, put his hand on my left shoulder, said, "It's safe to go home." And I remember feeling this overwhelming sense of safety and how special that made me feel. And at the end of the day, I knew I could go home, and obviously things didn't magically turn better in a heartbeat, but I did the old Lone Ranger thing and said, who was that masked man? And they said he was a psychologist that helped kids and their families. And I said, that's what I want to be when I grow up.
And that's what you've come to be.
Well, and my specialty, I hung out with a tough crowd. I hung out with a lot of kids that would wind up on probation or committed crimes. And for some reason, I always walked home right before it got too bad and knew to stay away from that. But I had a special interest in wanting to either become the psychologist or a probation officer and working with that population of kid.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Take Charge of Your Life. And we're talking today about the Project Impact. And where my guests this evening are Dr. Joe
Abraham,
who just told his very moving story about how he became interested in helping children with their difficult problems, and his lovely wife, Linda. And they are the co-founders of Project Impact. And Linda is the COO, the coordinating, chief coordinating officer of operations at Project Impact. And we're learning more about how Project Impact helps children who particularly have become involved with the juvenile justice system and what impact Project Impact is having on their lives. And so now you have this agency. And how does it involve young people who become involved in the juvenile probation system or the juvenile justice system? Linda?
Well, I think we have a number of different venues that are all community-based. You know, we deal with children who are both from juvenile probation, may have been referred to us, or children and youth who come from families who wouldn't or didn't, you know, look after them. We also have a lot of programs that deal with families that are living intact in their families, diversion programs, which help them, those that may have committed crimes, to not enter the juvenile justice system.
And when we come back, we're going to learn more about the diverse programs that afford youngsters the opportunity to restore their lives when we return to Take Charge of Your Life on WDIY.
WDIY reaches a well-informed and passionate listening audience every day. Enhance your image with our community by becoming an underwriting supporter. Spread the word about your business in an uncluttered atmosphere of high-quality NPR and locally produced programming. Underwriting is an affordable way to reach the public radio audience, and it may be tax-deductible. To learn more, call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit WDIY.org.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. Hello, this is Eleanor Bobrow, your host. This evening we're talking with the co-founders of the Impact Project, a private children and youth agency located in Emmaus, Pennsylvania. And we're talking with Dr. Joe Abraham, who is the CEO of the Impact Project. And we're also talking with Linda Abraham, his wife, who has served in the role as Director of Educational Services at the Impact Project and also as Chief Operating Officer for the past 22 years. Let's talk about the various programs that the Impact Project offers. You have two levels of programming. One is non-residential and the other is residential. Where would you like to start?
Well, I think chronologically it makes sense to start at the beginning, which is with our residential-based programs. Basically, we have several programs, foster care. We have independent living programs, Project Life. We have a sex offender step-down program, which are for abuse-reactive children. And we also have a supervised apartment living program, which is designed so that children who age out of the system learn to become independent. We get them started in their apartment while still and surrounding them with services. So basically, we provide the safety net in case there's situations that they, you know, require a little bit of help.
Linda, do you also help them to get jobs to support the apartment?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the biggest pushes in Pennsylvania right now is actually encouraging programs to connect those that were previously aging out of the system at age 18, but really didn't have the skills or the wherewithal or the money saved to, you know, be successful at living independently. And these are often people who ended up, you know, in shelters or on our welfare rolls. So we have the opportunity right now to extend their programming through age 21 and encourage them to become independent while receiving what would have been the role of parental support and services.
And how young do your services begin?
Well, we generally take children who are teenagers, I'd say, you know, 11 and above, those that could be adjudicated delinquent. However, we have since expanded into, you know, we take sibling sets, and it's really more widespread.
So that if a youngster has been adjudicated in the juvenile system, and let's say they're 12, but they have a 10-year-old sibling, you would take them both?
Is that
what you're saying?
We could.
Joe?
When we first started in the juvenile justice system of Pennsylvania, you can become adjudicated delinquent for a crime at age 10. And so you can stay in the system until your 21st birthday. Now, any offense committed after age 18 would be an adult offense. So when we first started, our basic premise was we're going to take the kids between the ages of 10 and 21. Mm-hmm. I think when Linda points out 11-year-olds, we rarely see an adjudicated 10-year-old.
Tell us about the programs that exist, the life support program.
Project Life.
Project Life.
Basically, that's designed for children who are 16 and older. It basically establishes programmatic modules that they need to work through that give them basic life skills, everything from cooking to balancing a checkbook, to interviewing skills, how to write a resume, a thank you note, how to go in and do an interview.
And the other, so that's one, the life skills.
Right. Yeah.
Our basic premise on Project Life, Life stands for learning, information, finances, and education. Mm-hmm. Our basic premise there was that instead of going to a residential facility or a group home to learn those skills, most of us learn that through a family environment. So we created a foster care model for these older kids. We put in a token economy system, so we had a behavior mod system going in a foster home. We made money a conditioned reinforcer and privileges. We put them through an entire independent living skills curriculum. We would assess them on a pre and post basis, both from mental health screenings to skill sets that they have for independent living. And then we put in the team of clinical therapists, case managers, and foster parents to make sure that we could work toward the goals that we established for those kids.
And I think one of the things that we do extra in these programs is that we have multiple professional touches. We have weekly case management. We have therapy that is required at least once a week. We have other modalities. We've used art therapy. We've used group therapy. So there's more than just what's mandated, you know, through the legal system.
So it's more than just going and getting a place with some foster parents and a foster family.
And the foster parents receive quite extensive training, not only in how to utilize a token economy system within their home, but how to advocate for the children, how to establish and carry out rules, how to, you know, integrate them into their own families while still, you know, potentially maintaining relationships with the child's natural family if that's, you know, a potential long-term plan.
So you try to reintegrate the natural parents with the foster family and the foster family program. Is that accurate, Joe?
Less so in the Project Life. When kids come into care, there's something called a family service plan, and there's five goals. Mm-hmm. Two of the goals are designed to keep families involved. One of those is called Planned Permanent Foster Care, and the other one is Return to Family. those are more our foster care programs. Project Life is for the older kids and maybe don't have the family who's a viable resource for them to go back to. So our other foster care program is more designed to do family reunification.
Right. But they're not mutually exclusive. Even children who are 16 and in the foster care program can also receive those services and learning.
Now, this is residential programming we were talking about.
And when we say residential, we don't mean that it's a 24-hour,
It's not a group home. It's not a residential home. It's a foster family.
Foster family.
It is.
Who receive services in order to help these youngsters become the best that they can be.
Right. Residential means they're no longer living with their biological or nuclear or intact family.
Right.
Now, you also have many programs that are called non-residential, where they're not living with foster parents. Is that accurate?
Yes. These are our what we call diversion programs. And diversion responds to the need to keep children out of the juvenile justice system. So these programs are designed as a first-time offender get-out-of-jail-free card, so to speak.
Can you give us an example of a first-time offender get-out-of-jail-card-free case where you saw progression from the offense to taking charge of their lives and seeing another way? Can you see?
Yeah, we have lots of examples of that. I guess I should... We have three programs, and so we have to pick which one. And if I just take one step back, these are programs that are run with Lehigh County Juvenile Probation. Beth Fritz is chief there, and the previous chief, Paul Worrell, has supported us tremendously in creating out-of-the-box thinking to try to invite kids to succeed. So what we've created are three programs. One is a collegiate mentoring program, which we run at Moravian College, Muhlenberg College, Cedar Crest College, or Lehigh County Community College. Another one is our community justice panels, which are run all in Lehigh County. We have 13 locations throughout Lehigh County that these panels are run. And then the last one that we just got a grant from the MacArthur Foundation for Lehigh County to try it for 2 years, and now the county has supported it for 2 years afterwards, so it's been running for 4 years. Is school justice panels. So, Linda, which one of those do you think we should tackle?
Well, let's start chronologically.
All right. Collegiate mentoring.
Yes, let's do that.
This was a program that Lehigh County had operating. There was a man named Brian Mushlitz in Lehigh County who was a Moravian grad who was a PO, and he arranged for kids on juvenile probation at the time in Lehigh County to go over one time in a semester to do an activity at a college and just demystify colleges a little bit. So when we brought on community justice panels, Lehigh County said, hey, would you also take over our collegiate mentoring program? And so I said, all right, what's the best way I can get 15, 16, 17-year-old male juvenile offenders who are dropping out at a 50% rate from high school to come to a college, and how can I get people at the college to help the kids educationally to mentor them and invite them to succeed? So Moravian stepped to the plate. One of their sororities said, we will gladly do this for the 8 to 10 weeks. We'll give you a sorority sister who will match up with the kid. We had probation officer staff there. We had impact project staff there. We created a curriculum. We gave them the opportunity to demystify colleges, as well as also to do homework. What was interesting was we got out of the first 73 kids, we had kids dropping out again at a 50% rate. Out of those first 73 kids, we had a very low attrition rate, and only one kid dropped out of high school. It long ago stopped being a dropout prevention program and became much more of a mentoring program. It continues to this day. Lehigh County still supports it. They usually pick two or three of those four colleges where they would like us to run it, and those colleges have stepped to the plate, and they help us get the mentors, and they help give us space on campus for these kids and part of our process of inviting kids.
Well, that sounds very exciting that you've had this success rate in this mentoring program. Can you give us briefly another example of a program for the non-residential?
Well, our community justice panels, which started approximately the same time as Joe had mentioned, is basically about diverting children, as I said, a first-time offense that may be referred from the magisterial district judge or from a probation officer.
Or the police.
And what they do is they refer them to our agency, And what we've done is we've created panels throughout Lehigh County.
Called justice panels?
It's called community justice panels. And they are people like, you know, ourselves, community members who want to make a difference in their community. And they form these panels. The child, it has to, you know, accept the fact that, yes, I did commit this act, come before the panel. And they are given a contract, an 8-week contract, which these members try to tailor make the needs of the child to the contract requirements. So, for instance, if a child might benefit more through giving back, doing some community service to learn more about how the community functions, apology letters are huge.
Community service time,
raising money, restitution, you know, giving back financially.
So here is the community justice panel really makes it possible for the youngster to, number one, accept responsibility
Absolutely.
For what he's done, make atonement, make amends, mm-hmm. and to do something constructive in the community to show that they've grown.
And to not be adjudicated delinquent and have that on their permanent record.
Right.
Well, that sounds really very exciting. Well, you know, we could go on for another hour because it sounds that the work that you're doing is very exciting. And I want to thank you, Dr. Joseph Abraham, co-founder and CEO of the Impact Project, and Linda Abraham, Chief Coordinating Officer of the Impact Project, for helping adolescents in the juvenile justice system to find pathways to take charge of their lives. You've given them hope and understanding that they cannot change what has happened to them. They cannot change the acts that they have committed, but they can make restitution, and they can find themselves, and they can be mentored and find hope and new possibilities of a new way of life, and not of becoming juvenile delinquents, but becoming contributors to society. Thank you for all you're doing with the Impact Project of the Lehigh Valley. If you would like to become involved as a foster parent, a volunteer, or a mentor, please contact the Impact Project at
610-965-5599 or on the web at theimpactprojectinc.net.
Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.